We keep hearing that while we're inundated with news, many of us feel less informed than ever. When seismic events happen, the fall of Wall Street, the rise of toxic nationalism across Europe, the 2016 US election, the reaction is, why didn't we see this coming? So perhaps the traditional model of journalism needs an oil and grease change. Editor, author, philosopher Rob Weinberg has been giving some thought to the matters arising. Rob is the founder of The Correspondent. It's a Netherlands-based news site which aims to redefine the very notion of news. And I spoke to him when he was touring Australia in September and began by asking what he saw as the flaws in the current model.
One of the most basic flaws of news is that it is always about exceptions, never about rules. Now, this is pretty obvious. If you say on the news, 10 million people went to work today, did their jobs, went back home, had dinner, went to sleep, they'll do it again, then everybody would say, that's not news. That's not newsworthy. But it's very fundamental to most...
But there's an interruption to that continuity.
Right.
That's news.
Exactly. So it's the exception to the rule. It's that which is so exceptional that it pops into the eye. Now, if you promise people to inform them about what is happening around them, help them understand what is happening around them, and you do this only by focusing on the exception to the rule, then at the end of the day, you will know exactly what is not happening in the world. And if you think this through, and I studied philosophy, so I tend to think through these concepts, then basically you are fundamentally misleading your audiences on a daily basis. So, and this hit me when I became editor-in-chief of the newspaper and slowly became aware of the question, what are we actually offering people? What are we actually telling people about the world? And is it really informing them on a level they need?
So what do you do about it?
Well, that's a good question. Part of it is trying to really redefine news, like the ideology behind news, the things that are, the students of journalism are taught what news is to be. You have to change that first. So, for example, one very simple feature of how news is taught is the definition of current affairs. So news always has to be about today. If you cannot explain to your editor why a story has to run today and not tomorrow, then you have a problem.
So you're talking about the need to contextualize, of working to a different rhythm?
So yeah, so for example, at The Correspondent, I tell my journalist, don't focus on the question, why do I have to tell this story today? But focus on the question, why would this story be relevant every day? Like, it doesn't matter if I tell it today, tomorrow, or next week. It has such a huge influence on society or such huge impact on people's lives. I could tell this story every day. That would
be in a sense, the story we just did with Alex Wallerstein on the relationship between US presidents and the bomb
right.
is such a story.
Exactly. So, but that kind of story would not run on a front page, for example. That would be background information, as it were called. And I would say most of that context is so important to understand the actual world around us, it should be on the forefront much more. And let me illustrate what the biggest problem, because the effects of this news ideology are huge. So, for example, the financial crisis, there's a huge consensus in traditional media that nobody saw this coming. And as for something like the election of Donald Trump, the same goes. Like, nobody saw this coming.
No one saw Brexit coming.
Exactly,
No one saw the fall of the Soviet, et cetera,
exactly.
et cetera, et cetera.
And now then the discussion always ends up in, between ideologies. Like, oh, yeah, because media are left-wing, so they don't want to see these issues of Brexit or Trump or whatever, or the financial crisis. But I think it's not that ideological at all. I think the reason why media and journalists specifically don't get these stories run on the front page before they explode in our face, it's because they are explicitly taught not to view the world in that way. If you view the world only through the exceptions of the rule, like a falling bank or the election of Donald Trump as president, and then these things come on your radar, you miss the daily structural development behind it. So, for example, banks taking risks and adding those risks upon other risks on a daily basis. If you miss that whole structural development in society, then you're going to end up being very surprised by the consequences of that development.
When you were 27, you were editor of NRC Next. From what I can gather, aimed at a new kind of media consumer, someone who was informed on day-to-day events but wanted more depth. And you divided it into three sections: knowing, for news, thinking, with insights and opinion, and doing, things to do and see. Please. Right.
Well, the first thing that struck me is that the newspapers, still most newspapers, have a very, very traditional, kind of old-fashioned Cold War sections, like national news, international news. Most developments in the world don't really fit that national, international, or national foreign news prisma anymore. It's very Cold War thinking there. I mean, climate change, for example,
it's everywhere.
It's not in a country. Financial institutions are not in a country, so it doesn't really make sense to divide up your newspaper in categories like national, international, sports, stuff like that. So the first thing I thought was, we have to get rid of those old Cold War categories and replace them with things that really help you understand things in a 21st century way. Now, this is pretty hard to do because at a traditional print newspaper, traditions are very strong. We've been doing this for 100 years now.
Well, I belong to that dinosaur tradition, so I'm certainly wedged in it.
Right, exactly. And many are. And there are logics to it as well. But what I, when I got fired from my job because of this, so you can see how strong the tradition is there. But luckily I got fired because that gave me the chance to start up the a platform which became The Correspondent in a completely new way. And there we say, don't think in these old-fashioned categories. Think in terms of long-term developments that really show you how the world works on a daily basis. So, for example, we have a correspondent aging. Aging is a phenomenon that has so many different aspects, not only lifestyle-wise or personal, but also for society as a whole. And if you have a prisma like that, you put on your glasses and you say, I'm going to view the world through this development of aging populations everywhere in the world, then you get a whole different sense of what matters in the world and how to accurately describe those developments.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt the flow, but no, I want you to talk to what you describe as visible but negligible threats. This is a very provocative argument and will interest the listener.
Right. Most news is focused on the very visible aspects of our world. So, for example, the clearest example is terrorism. Terrorism is a relatively small phenomenon with very high visible impact. Because of the huge amount of attention it attracts, it feels much bigger than it really is. Now, non-visible, non-sensational developments that are way more important, way more even deadly, don't get to the front page at all on TV nor in the newspaper. So, for example, sugar addiction in Western societies is millions of people die of this on a yearly basis, way more than terrorism ever could accomplish. It's never a real subject. It might be like in the background in some kind of
Yes, there's the
editorial.
Odd television documentary and
right
news report, but basically you're right.
So there's a Dutch journalist had a very great example of the visible versus the non-visible when he talked about coverage of the Israel-Palestinian conflict. Now, already the problem on the Israel side of this conflict is suicide attacks, explosions, people getting killed on exploding buses, stuff like that. Palestinians throwing rocks. This is a very visible. You can actually point a camera to it and say, "Here, I'll show you. This is the problem Israel has." Now, the Palestinian part of the conflict is occupation. It's very hard.
Less
visible, and very hard to actually picture. It's a
permeation,
right,
rather than a visual event.
Exactly. So if you go with your camera and you try to show the world what the Palestinian part of the problem here is of that conflict, then you won't really see anything. Like you will see, I don't know, police on the street, or but you can't really film it. Now, this problem goes for many, many problems in the world where the visible is favored many times over the invisible. And I think journalists should be aware that their tendency to point to the most visible parts of the world is actually misleading their audiences.
You obviously agree that journalism and free press are under threat from Trump in the US. Are there similar threats to the media in Europe?
Well, I think the biggest threat anywhere in Western societies to journalism and to news media in general is the huge amounts of distrust all over the public sphere. So in the Netherlands, and this goes, I don't know how bad the numbers are in Australia, but if they're similar, then they're bad. I mean, journalists or media in general are distrusted even more than politicians in the Netherlands. And that goes for the United States as well. It totally makes sense for somebody like Donald Trump, although he may be one of the biggest reasons for it, that he constantly attacks media as fake news or and feeds this distrust. I think pointing to Donald Trump for attacking the media and thinking that you have no role in it yourself is the biggest threat to media. We have to really reconsider what we're doing wrong as journalists.
Are you also a great advocate of citizen journalists?
Well, in the sense that I think readers, citizens, can be engaged way more into the journalistic process as citizens than they are now. I'm not in favor of something like saying journalism is not a job, anybody can do it, give a citizen a camera and he will be a journalist. I'm not that kind of citizen journalist. But I do think that citizens play a role in helping journalists inform them about the world around them and share their knowledge and expertise with journalists so we can make sense of the world we describe. So yes, I think journalism should be way more a two-way street and instead of just getting it out there.
And it is a two-way street with your...
Yes, I tell my correspondents, basically 50% of your job is interacting with your readers, having conversations with them, and getting them to contribute what they know to your journalism. It is a no-go to us if you say, "Oh, engaging with my readers is a lot of extra work." Then my reply would be, no, that is your work. Journalism is not just taking notes, interviewing an expert, and then writing the story, publish it, and go home. No, the conversation that follows from it is an integral part of journalism and your job.
That was Rob Weinberg. founder of The Correspondent, editor, author, and philosopher.